This is a Pinball News production.
Well, thank you very much. Loud. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for all coming. Yeah, it's not going to be a real cerebral presentation, I'll tell you right now. My name is Art Kreisel. I work, as he said, over at Pinball Perfection. It's a typical pinball store over in Pittsburgh area. In fact, I think I have a slide of Pittsburgh there. As a pinball store, you know, like they all do, we buy, sell, trade, repair, whatever. Some differences between the pinball store that we have and some of the other ones are the third floor of the building is a museum. There's over 300 games up there. And we have them, you know, by year, all the wood rails, 1939 to 61, it goes on, all the way to present day. It's a lot of fun. We have a little bit of concern with the borough of Westview where we are, because they said, well, you know, if money goes through the machine, we get a cut. In the city of Pittsburgh, it's a $200 ticket. You know, you want that tax stamp on your machine, it's $200 a year. When you got 300 machines, that's tough, you know, you can't do that. So what we've done is said, well, that's a museum. You pay one price admission to get in. We put a little paper band around your wrist, and then you can go in and observe these different exhibits. Coincidentally, most of them play, too, so you can play. And that's how we get around that. Yeah. But we still have the concern of getting people in the door, right? So here, by the way, is a picture of the building, Pinball Perfection. I don't know if any of you caught that whenever I said that there's 300 games on the third floor. You know, how do you get 300 games upstairs? You know, well, this building, and that's an original picture. It looks a little better than that now. That's 1940 when it was built. It's in the Guinness World Book of Records because every floor of the building opens out onto the same street. Yeah, how does it do that? Up in the upper left there, it's on a hill, and that's the third floor where the museum is, lots of parking. It comes downhill, has a real sharp bend, and by that time, you're in the middle level of the building, where the showroom is. It goes the length of the building downhill some more, and then you're in the basement level. So all three floors open in the same. That's how you get 300 games up there. That's my commercial for Pinball Perfection. Yeah. When you have 300 games, you still got to get people in there. Some ways that you can get people in, you know, what draws them in? Signage and toppers, we tried that. And you can see that next door here. You know, whenever people are walking down the aisle and there's a machine with a topper on it, they kind of go that way, you know. So that works out real good. Signage we put up, signs beside the machines, you know, this is the first game to do this and that, and, you know, this guy invented it when he was on drugs and, you know, this other thing happened, you know, whatever. And people like that. It gets them in a little bit. Paper hand dots and cards and flyers. You see that next door, too. Everybody over there believes that that's going to work. That's why this was just walking around for about 5 minutes. I got a stack of these things. And it does work to a point, you know. The cards and the flyers work to a point. On the 24th, next Saturday, we have the elementary school up the street coming over. And the PTA there sold tickets to the kids and the children. We have about 150 to 200 kids coming because we sent out flyers. So that worked out pretty good. News items. This is one that we thought of. We go online and find out the latest news. What's happening at Stern? What are they building next? You know, and we print it out. And then we go and stick it on the wall, right above the urinal. And boy, does that work good. Most of the guys see that, you know. On-screen trivia doesn't take up a lot of space. We have a lot of old junky computers around. Any junky computer can run a PowerPoint presentation. History, trivia. People that come in and play pinball like the trivia. They get to show that they know the answers to the things. and it informs them. It's a lot of fun too. QR codes. I just pulled one in there. That's those ugly little squares. We printed those out and put one right above the shooter on every game. Now, if you have a smartphone and the app, you can come in, and there are signs that say where you can get the app if you don't have it. Your smartphone looks at that app, takes you right to the International Pinball Database, and you find out more about that game. And that's gone over pretty good, too, especially with the young people. They have the smartphones. Works out. So that's how we've met some of the challenges of getting people in there. But all those things together, there's one that draws them in even better, and that's a hands-on display. That's what these things are. On a hands-on display, one of the reasons I say it's better is because of our past successes. We had a booth down at Replay FX, another expo show like this one down in Pittsburgh, had just that one and I think the Chime Box with us. And everybody went right past all the things we had to look at and went right to that. So I know people like it. And it was over here yesterday, and it'll be over there again this afternoon. And people like to look at it. The general public like to look at it. Like pretty colors, bright lights, works out good for them. Pinheads love them. And please don't be offended when I say pinhead. I'm a pinhead. It's like saying a guy that works on cars is a motorhead. We're pinheads. And it's with affection I say that. They love it because they can go over and say, well, I know how that works. They're happy to do that. And they're happy to explain it. And yesterday we had at least two people come by and say, I just bought my first EM, and that thing there is in it, and I didn't know what it did till I read that. Now I know what it does. So they're all going to like it. Space requirements is a big thing. Whether you have two games or one game in your basement and don't have room for another one, or whether you have a big arcade you sell coffee in too, sooner or later you're going to run out of space. These don't take up space. It's not even as much of a footprint as there is with a video game. So space-wise, they're good for you. You can use all your old parts. I know everybody's got old parts. I saw a lot of them there. It doesn't cost you that much to build the thing. It says it's a fun way to educate. Yeah. Now, your purpose might not be to educate people, but they're going to stand in front of it and be entertained, and they're going to learn something even though they don't want to. Yeah. School and scout troop field trips. Yeah. We have a big party room. We have a lot of parties. A lot of kids come. And they stand in front of it, and because they can touch it and put their hands into it, they love it. The pretty colors. And they actually learn something. Yeah. When we have scout troops come in, you show the scout troops two or three displays, maybe open up a game and let them see what's going on there. They're three quarters of the way to another merit badge. All they have to do is write a paper, and they get a merit badge for doing that. So it's good for them. So that's why I'm thinking, hands-on display, it's a pretty good idea. Okay, we're going to switch this over to the camera. There it is. Okay. This display is made to hang on a wall. There's hooks here, and that's what it normally does. Now, it's in a hallway, but it only sticks out 8 inches. You sure couldn't put another machine in your space that way, but you can with this. What are we looking at? Okay, you have the tilt mechanisms. Now, this display is individual parts. Like this up here shows about tilts. Here shows about drop targets. Here shows about pop bumpers. So each one is independent. You can have two people standing here playing with this thing at the same time, and they enjoy it. Over here, show me this flipper area, or what do you call it, tilt area. You'll see that there's the device, like here's a plumb bulb right here, and they get to hit it around. When they do, it lights up, and they can reset it. And there's an explanation above it. Here you show them, that's what the slam switch works like. If you bang the machine down, that weight wiggles and makes contact. And the words here in this little info strip say that. There's the one that typically rolls uphill. And there's an explanation for that, how that works. And it says in there that this is in every pinball machine. They all have these tilt mechanisms. You know. How about this one? Here's a pop bumper. The hands-on part of this is says, hey, kid, lift the blue button. And when they do, the ball rolls downhill. Okay. So they get a little hands-on there. You know. Here's another one that's hands-on. It's an eject hole with an explanation of the eject hole, how it works. When you lift the... Can you get that one? I mean, on screen? Yeah. You lift it up, the ball rolls into the hole. When you lay it back down, the contacts make it jumps out. And there's an explanation. Same with the flipper that's beside it. There's a flipper, and it's mounted upside down, and it says on there that it's inverted so you can, for clarity, so you can see what's actually happening there, you know? Rollovers, roll-unders. Oh, here's one. This is the drop targets. This drop target has the memory so that you can, the first two are down. When it resets, then the machine would knock down just those two. So it describes how the second how it knows that the second person has different drop targets than the first one, the memory. So that's our display on that one. It normally hangs on a wall. The feeder, as I said before, it hangs on a wall, but the feeder just for the show. Here's a simple display. It doesn't take much room. Doesn't take a lot of your junk parts. Nothing but a chime box. Right? Chime box and a motor. It's on an old hunk of 2x6 that I had laying around. Painted pretty colors, pretty lights on it. It's a display. It's drawing people into your establishment. Yeah. Up here's the description of what's going on, a little history of chime boxes, what they're doing for sound now instead, you know. This one has relays under, which you really didn't even need, but that's so that you can't push two at the same time. Have you any questions or comments about any of these displays? No? Okay. Well, you know what? I'll show you one other type of display, the video display. Right. Here's what I'm going to call a video display. We don't need that anymore. Thank you. What's that?
Just the detail. A lot of pinball players, they concentrate on top of the playing field. Myself, with what I do, with what I'm fascinated by, just blown away by how you have all the mechanics out and you show it to, you know, pretty much everybody. A lot of people do not realize what it takes to make a pinball machine work, and I think it's great. I was beside Art down at Replay FS, and there was a steady line of people going over there just to see this display. And then all of a sudden they would leave and they would get their friends to come back and show. And it was just a great, you know, display. So I appreciate what you're doing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. This is kind of like that. Have you seen that clear box pinball machine? You can look. Yeah, everybody's seen that. This is kind of like that, you know, you get to see everything that's in it. If you wanted to do this with a video cabinet, like this one, this is an old Pac-Man board, you know. And if you keep on converting video cabinets to multi-games, you get a big stack of these things, right? Which we have done. Now, this one has buttons on, has the Pac-Man thing so you can see it. What you'll notice is really missing is the screen, so it's tough to play, you know. Real tough to play this game without that screen. But if you put the screen on your video display, what do you have? The game. All you have is the game. Well, we're not showing you the game, we're showing you how the things work in the game. This one, each button, when you throw it into test mode, would show you one of the sounds. So that's pretty much all this does, is plays the different sounds. Now, this particular one has jacks on it here that if you wanted to, you could plug in a cord and hang on a wall here beside it a monitor. And then the other jack is for a joystick, so somebody could stand there and you could actually play this thing as a display, but we're doing it that way. This one's a little dressier. It's again Pac-Man. Up in the corner here is a little history of the fellow that invented in Japan and the team that he had working for him. And it does the same thing. You push the buttons and it plays the music. It's just a little more artsy. So we're hoping that the displays are going to draw people in. Okay, as you build these displays, now I'm sure that everybody in this room could do this. I mean, you're all here. I'm sure that you know enough. You could go out and build one of these displays, and you probably most of you have enough parts to do it laying around the garage, you know. So it's no big deal. I do have some ideas for you as far as best practices, things that if you are going to do this, that I learned the hard way. Safety and fun. If you're going to make it something like this that stands against the wall, anchor it against the wall so it don't fall anybody. That would be good. That's a safety issue. And you'll notice that the parts where you can shock yourself are covered in plexiglass. So there's a safety thing that you should think of, because you got the general public, and whatever they can do to hurt themselves on your machine, they're going to do it. You know, so think about that. It's got to be fun. Fun in terms of bright lights, bright colors, some sound. It's going to attract them. That's a good idea, I think. Has to work for shorter attention spans. If you build a display and it's too cerebral and it takes too much time to do, where those little information cards are too big and too wordy, you're going to lose them. Right? People aren't going to come. No supervision required? Yeah. You don't want to have to babysit the thing. You don't have to stand beside it and say, well, see, this does this and this does the next thing. No, let the cards speak for you. Make them succinct, clear. You know. So you don't want to have to babysit the thing. Clear schematics and information cards? Yeah, that's key. The schematics are for you or the next person that has to look at it and fix it, because with the general public getting their fingers in there, you might have to fix it. Typically, I will take all the schematics, and it'll be one for each element, print out a paper copy, shove them in an envelope and hang it on the back of the machine, and then they're on a computer, so I'll take a memory stick and hang that in the back of the machine too, so the next person doesn't get stuck. Here's a typical schematic. I know you've seen a million of them. If you do it yourself, I suggest you do it on a computer, do it in color, put a million notes on it, because 3 months from now, whenever you go back and look at it, you're going to not remember how it works. You know. There's a couple more. There's one for score reels, because one of our other displays has score reels in it. One of the displays that was a little bit too big to bring is two play fields. They're identical play fields beside each other, and that's the backdrop for the machine. And then there's dowel rods coming out about 7 inches, and hanging on the dowel rods are the different pieces of the display. And they're Jones plug ended, because I had Jones plugs. So you can unplug a display and shove a different one in. So it's kind of modular. You know, took an idea from P3 and some of the other fellows. So, yeah. Here's what the typical, what I'm calling information cards, look like. Here's some tips on that. Make it a big enough font that you can see the thing. Okay? And they've got to be succinct and small. If they're too wordy, nobody's going to read them. And the pictures are helpful also. Like here's the ones for the rollovers. There's, I think I have rollovers, roll-unders, spinners. And there's one of those by each one of those. And the pictures are good, you know. So the people don't just have to read, they can look at the pictures. I showed you the video games without a monitor. That's something that we're doing, because look at the footprint on that. It's like hanging a picture on the wall. There's nothing to that. Well, I think that's all I need to tell you about the displays. I know that everybody in here could do this if you wanted to. And it just amazes me how popular the things are. People are like Dan said, at Replay FX, people just kept, they passed everything else we had and kept coming to that. Well, go ahead, you know. Have you any comments, criticisms, suggestions, advice, observations, questions about anything I said there? anybody think they might do this?
Are you going to pass the Zerowski so we can see
him? Pardon me?
Are you going to pass the Zerowski so we can see him? Yeah, you're the first one to pass it.
Well, we're not going to pass it around, but what we will do is we're going to leave it here until the next speaker comes up, and then we'll probably run it back over to the other room, and it'll be there probably most of the afternoon, so you know, look at it. All these displays will be there for that. Yes, I'm good. Do you have a question?
Well, a comment, because I already saw this in Replay FX. Have you thought about using color codes to maybe explain a little bit more, like every time it's a blue light, that is signifying something, or certain wire colors signify something? You know, maybe get away from the verbal a little bit by trying to use color more?
I think I did sort of like that. The other display that has the two play fields for the backdrop, I used a lot of the buttons off of a poker game. They're kind of square and they have a light on them. And you can rip out the paper and put in your own words. And on those, the whole display, where the ball goes through, lights up the button and it flashes. So if you step back from the machine, whatever button's flashing, that's the one you're supposed to push next. So we've kind of made it a little more intuitive that way. And the idea with the colors is great. We should maybe do something more with that, because that's kind of whiteboard. There's no colors on it other than the frame. Other comments, anybody? Yeah. The other thing I was going to talk about, Sip and Puff. That's a close-up of one of our shirts from tournament number 4 that we had, Sip and Puff tournaments. I'll give you a little background on Sip and Puff. In 1970, I met a good friend of mine, Gary Marintz. Doesn't mean anything to you, but Gary Marintz and his younger brother, Robbie, nice people. Gary was working his way through Penn State and working at a pinball place, Atlas Music in Pittsburgh. And he fixed pinball machines. I did not, you know. And when he's fixing pinball machines, his younger brother, Robbie, was in a car with a bunch of other kids going to school. And on a Pittsburgh snowy day, a mail truck T-boned him and left Robbie a quadriplegic. Quadriplegic means from here on, you don't move. Right? Whenever that happened, it was really sad. Robbie laid in a bed there for a few months, and his brother decided, I got to do something to help him. So he brought home a pinball machine. Bobby Orr, one with the hockey player guys on, put it at the foot of his bed, and Robbie already got from the rehabilitation center a mouth stick that you blew into, and it operated a little switch. And if you drew back on it or sipped on it, it was a different switch. Hence what became Sip and Puff. Now these are pretty common. If you see somebody in a wheelchair, they might be using a mouth stick and a minute head movement to guide the chair. And to make it go, you blow into it a little bit, then operates that switch and you're going. Well, he adopted that to the flippers. So Robbie, they cranked up the bed. Robbie played pinball by blowing in a stick, Sip and Puff. Worked out real good for him. Now, rigging up a pinball machine or to do something like that is not new. Dan is over here from Project Pinball. Now, he doesn't rig up the machines and do a lot of surgery to them, but he fixes them beautiful and puts them into hospitals, children's hospitals. How many are we up to now?
15 children's hospitals across the
country. 15 children's hospitals he puts machines in. Now, this is children, I guess a lot of them are able to get their hands around the flipper buttons and make it work. Yeah, so that's not really my audience for Sip and Puff, but man, what a great thing he's doing there. There's a map there that shows with the pins in it all over the place where he's doing that. Oh, you're welcome. Here's an outfit that I saw online. They build a device that has sip and puff capabilities and other capabilities so the handicapped people can play their PlayStation, Xbox, all those different home kind of games. It can be converted to pinball so that you can play it with pinball. Now, I don't have a picture of it, but there's another fella that took a pinball machine and took the front legs off and sawed it so that you could sold it and took off half the front of the machine so that you could slide a chair under it. And even went as far as counterbalancing so it could cantilever out over the person playing the game, and then put hydraulics in it, kind of like a low-rider car. You know, you push the button, it would go up and down, so you could adjust it for the height of the person that was sitting there, you know. And then there was even a safety switch in it, so if you lowered it down too hard, it would shut off the hydraulics before it crushed them. That's a lot of work. Now, here's somebody, Indigo, this is in Iowa. They built 15 of these machines. And you can see they've done something like that. They cut the front of the machine off so you can slide under it, took the legs off, put wide legs on it out to the sides so you could get in there. And it's on rollers so you can push it around. And then in the front, in case you have some motor nerve coordination problem, they put big buttons on there so that you could even play it that way. That's a heck of an effort. They're trying to raise money to buy these machines. Go around $3,000 a piece. That works pretty good. Now, if I had Stern's avatar machine, I can't see me taking a saw to that thing and cutting it open so a person can slide under it. You know, it would break my heart. I couldn't do that to that machine. Some of them you could. None that are here, of course. What's that?
There was a company in the 80s. There was a company in the 80s that came to the show called Arcade Access. Uh-huh. And they took pinball machines, I think it was a Gottlieb Goldwings, and they sawed off the bottom for wheelchair, and they also had sip and puff. They didn't last very long, but I remembered them. Had you ever heard of them?
Yes, I have.
Arcade Access.
Arcade. You hear that one? Arcade Access? Yeah, they did this in the 80s. From 1974, I think it was. 72 or 74, we were doing the sip and puff and put on tournaments at the rehab center. It started out with 5 or 6 games and would have all the people come in. It grew. It grew to 10 games, then 20 games. And we were having tournaments 4 times a year. And then Gary kind of dropped out of it because he got a better job at a radio station, and I ran with it. I worked at Verizon at the time. I got Verizon involved. They had a social organization called the Pioneers. And they were gracious enough to take a garage of theirs that held 200 trucks, empty the garage, come in and power wash down the walls. Their graphic arts department hung curtains on the walls, and we brought in our, at that time, 65 games that we had, all of them modified. And we would have easily 100 people in there because they'd bring them in by busloads. You know? So it really grew. This was actually the biggest sip and puff thing, I think, at the time, and I think since then too. A lot of people are making a great effort, but that was the biggest one. It was really nice because not only could the kiddo realize the dream of playing a pinball machine, but they could play it against Franco Harris, because we'd get a lot of football players and hockey players in to the tournaments. It was good PR for them, and it was wonderful for the kids. You know, so it became huge.
Or this was in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, that was in Pittsburgh. Actually, it was the East Liberty Garage. Yeah, that we did that in. Well, I told you the Robbie and Gary Marin story. That's how that started. And it grew a long time, till in the 80s, whenever Verizon split, and half the games had to go to AT&T, and half them went to Verizon. And then I went on to do something else. So we kind of lost, and we sold off the games and quit doing it. About 6 of those games ended up in the museum that I work in. So if you come to that museum, not only is it unique because it's a museum, but there's a half dozen games there that you could roll your wheelchair up to and play if you wanted to. We're enjoying that. Here's what that sip and puff thing looks like to the player. It's a box. This is an old electrical box. It's held on to the door there with magnets. No big deal. And all it has to house is a couple switches and a couple jacks. The jacks are typical quarter-inch stereo jacks because a quarter-inch stereo jack has three leads in it. Left, right, flippers, and any other one's the common lead to bring it back. So that's all you really need. This one shows two jacks because it's for two players. There's some switches on there. The one says power, which you really don't need. You can leave it on. But then there's a reverse switch. We actually find that some people on certain games, they're biased towards the right flipper, and that's the sip. So if you throw the reverse, it reverses a sip and puff to puff and sip. So you can do that. Then the newbies that don't play that well yet, the both switch just ties them together. So whether you sip or you puff, both of them are going to go. Right? So you have a better shot at, you know, playing a game. Don't think that for a second that somebody rolls up in a wheelchair and they have a sip and puff that you're going to kill them. Oh, no. They get very good at this. Little Johnny that doesn't come around anymore, you know, he finds out he can play pinball for free. He comes up and gets killed. You know, I shouldn't say killed. He loses the game. Another schematic. By the way, all these schematics for all the different devices we have been thoughtfully produced and are available to you. I started putting them all on Pinterest, but I found out you have to have a login and password to do that. Same thing with Facebook. So what I have is a stack of 3x5 cards. And anybody wants these, all these schematics, I will gladly email them to you. So just jot down your email. I'll email them to you either tomorrow or the next day. And as soon as I do that, I'll throw the card away. So don't worry, anything's going to happen to your information. More schematics. This kind of sums that up. Wheelchair users and people with disabilities just want to access life. They just need the opportunity. Did you see any? Now, there's the population in America that uses wheelchairs, arm amputees, whatever. How many did you see next door? None. We're excluding a big audience here, you know? It says, we hope to give all people the inclusive opportunity to experience the classic enjoyment of pinball. You're digging it. So would they, you know? The bottom line for it is, everyone can play if we let them. Have you any comments, criticisms, suggestions, advice?
Tell them
what?
Tell them how the sequencer works.
How the sequencer works. That's a good question from my partner here. I left out the part. How's the sequencer work? Okay. Here's how this, to the player, you roll up to the machine, you plug in a standard stereo cord that you can buy anywhere, and on the end of it, the switch for that matches their ability. If all they can move is their head, it's a head switch. If all they can move is an elbow, you Velcro an elbow switch to them. Blinker. We're just experimenting with that. Blinker switches, you know, but that works. So they plug in whatever their ability is. The first, we'll keep it to sip and puff. The first puff starts the game and launches the ball into the trough. Because the ball's in the trough switch says, oh, the next pulse or puff goes towards launching the ball. Fling. Now, if it's a cool, like I know Stern has a lot of those games that there's an electronic ball launcher plus the, you know, that's the ideal situation. If you don't have that, it's old electromechanical, you just rip out the ball shooter and put in a coil. Either way. So it launches. It's up on a high arch. Since it's up on the high arch and the trough switch is empty, all the next pulses or puffs go towards the flippers. When you finally lose a ball, it goes down a drain, gets put back up in a trough, the trough switch says, next pulse, launch the ball. Once it's out of the trough, the rest of the pulses go towards the flippers. And you can keep that cycle going all day long. and keep on playing game after game after game. Comes in a two. We have a schematic there for a two-player, three-player, four-player that you just set it for, and then two people keep playing, and it'll go from the first player to the second player. That's what that one schematic was. It's the sequencer. We're doing it with like six relays because we have them. If someone would pick it up and want to build a little board that did that, maybe some auxiliary board that could be added into electromechanical or digital game, I'm sure that it wouldn't be relays. I'm sure it would be, you know, something else, some kind of electronics, probably a board about that big that you could buy for $25. I wish somebody here would invent that. That would be nice. Yeah. That's how the sequencer works. Are there any other questions, comments, criticisms? Yes. Sip and Puff?
Yeah.
He's saying that he Googled Sip and Puff and nothing come up.
Like I was trying to interface a game for a handicapped person, and I was trying to get, you know, what kind of jacks they are, what kind of voltage they use, and all the, you know, technical specs on Sip and Puff. I couldn't find anything.
Well, I can certainly offer you all the schematics, and anything I've developed is yours. You know, my boss thinks we're going to make $1,000 on this. It's not what it's not for the money. It's to get more people to play pinball, you know?
Well, I want to push on that a little more. I think the question, I'm a guy who works with standards, and the question is, could the manufacturers of the human interface device, whether it's Sip and Puff or the head switches or whatever, reduce it down so they say the interface is three conductors in a connector. Here's the voltage it can handle, and it's closing a switch closure that can handle so many amps. If they would give us that interface and say the manufacturers that know about working with the human body take everything up to the point of that interface, and then not only can pinball go from that interface forward, but a whole range of other devices would all come from that interface into whatever needed to be controlled, whether it's home appliances or just anything in the course of everyday living that's electrified.
I think that would be a wonderful thing if it happens.
But you're not aware of that existing already?
No, I'm not.
Okay, thank you.
So there is no universal, like every system possible to have this type of jack?
Well, everyone that we ever build, and all those machines in the past that we built, we use a quarter-inch stereo jack because it's three conductors. You can get them everywhere. That's the standard I would actually set, because they're cheap enough and you can get them and they're reliable. You know, every rock star believes that they work good, you know. Is there a standard, though? Sadly, I don't know of one. But it's a good idea to get it.
Right. Yeah. I think organizations that help the disabled might possibly know if there are such standards.
Yeah, they probably would. Other questions? Yeah. Sir? Can you do multi-ball?
Yeah. Because
well, sure.
You were explaining the ball tray has to be empty. Then it knows the next switch will be go to that one. But today's modern games have four or five balls in there.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So the game automatically shoots the extra balls.
Well, not always. No, question is it going to work on multi-ball? Yeah. Well, it's a good question. It's a real good question. And I think that would be easily done. All you'd have to do in a multi-ball game is make it so that if a ball's in a trough, it launches it but does not kill the power to the flippers. You'd have it, because then you have your flippers in and it would launch. So that'd be an easy thing to do. One or two more contacts on the relay. So I think the answer is yes to that. Yeah. Other questions? Yes, sir. Okay, I'll get out of here. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you.
Those cards are up here if anybody wants those schematics. Just write your email address on there. I'll send them all to you. job. Thanks.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you.
I would love anything you could send me.
Oh, great. And I will.
Thank you.
It might not be.
Well,
it'll be definitely in a week.
Cutting the corners off the square to make it a wheel will help.
Well put.
Yeah.
Just throw it in there. I'll get you.
Appreciate it.
Cable yours or theirs?
That's theirs.
Yeah, I can get that. Your alarm clock is.
That's mine.
I recognize it.
Is this the car? Is that the car?
Yes.
Okay. There's here. There's down here.
Powers.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.